Hello and welcome along to Unbelievable. I'm Justin Brierley. This is the weekly show on Premier Christian Radio that brings Christians and non-Christians together for conversations that matter. Normally, I'm the one moderating these conversations, but this week, doing again what we did last week and hearing the second part of a special conversation I had recently with mentalist and illusionist Derren Brown. Today's show, all the links, the podcast, articles, videos, and our recent Unbelievable conference on DVD, available from the website. Go there, Premier Christian Radio. radio.com/unbelievable. If you enjoy what you hear on today's show, please do subscribe to the Unbelievable podcast and you'll be able to hear cutting-edge conversations between high-profile Christians and skeptics every week. You're unbelievable. Now, of course, Derren Brown is probably the UK's most famous mentalist. He was once a Christian in his teens and early 20s, but lost his faith at university. We heard him talk about that with me on last week's programme, and we also debated the evidence for the resurrection, the nature of atheism, and other things. This week, we're specifically going to be talking about his latest stage show, Miracle. Many of his TV shows have been laced with scepticism towards religion and how people can be fooled into believing in the supernatural. But with Miracle, Derren's taken things even further. It is incredible, but also very challenging for charismatic Christianity, as he effectively reproduces many of the phenomena you might see at a charismatic healing rally. He sort of adopts this persona of a healing evangelist himself. The audience goes through an extended exercise intended to flood us with feel-good emotions, and then those who believe they've experienced any sort of healing queue up at the side of the stage, and all sorts of things apparently appear to have been healed. So we're going to be talking about all of that on the programme today. As I mentioned last week, this was first and foremost an interview. I wasn't really seeking to have a full-on debate with Derren, though we do sometimes get in some gentle debating territory. So it's very much a conversation. And if you want to read my write-up of this interview with Derren, it's also our cover feature on the September edition of Premier Christianity magazine. Go to our website, premierchristianity.com, to read it, or request a free sample copy of the beautiful magazine itself at premierchristianity.com/free sample. So settle back for part two of this interview with Derren Brown as we pick up talking about his stage show, Miracle.
You were demonstrating how the effects that we often see touted in the charismatic healing world can be produced effectively by a combination of, I guess, of suggestion, manipulation, bit of illusion as well, I'm sure. And it was incredibly amazing. I don't know how you did it. I don't know how you can basically cold read someone and tell them you're experiencing a pain here and and that kind of thing. Is it your view that that's always what's going on in the charismatic world? I mean, we've talked already about some of the perhaps more extreme examples, but in the small, quiet setting, no big crowd dynamic happening, and someone claims to have experienced a healing and it's stayed like that, do you think it's always a psychological effect?
Well, I've a few years ago I made a big documentary on this subject, and the we took a guy who was a diving instructor, and the idea was we'd go out, take him out to the deep south and pass him off as a healer, if he could do it.
Miracles for sale.
Miracles for sale, that's right. What came out of that research then, going into small and large events and secretly filming them, and a lot of interviews with people that had been healed, that had started it, many things that didn't make it to the show, and some horrendous stories. What's very clear from those demonstrations, leaving aside for the moment the question of whether or not God can heal, if we just leave that aside, if we just talk about faith healers who are coming out before a congregation and doing that sort of event. And I myself, you see it in the show, actually, I get taken up on stage, and I have it. This is one of the sort of main guys. He was bigger, W.V. Grant, so he was bigger way back, and of course, like all of them, he got done for tax evasion, and now he's still peddling his stuff on in an old disused on an old secondhand car sales room, which is now his church off the interstate, and he got me up on stage and told me I had one leg longer than the other. And did a trick whereby basically, by manipulating one shoe, he can give the impression that my leg is growing, it is extending to join the other one. Now, that is a trick. I mean, there is no way, however charitably disposed you want to be, that you can say he's even somehow fooling himself into believing that.
He was just a con man.
That's a scam. Now, so that, in a way, those are quite helpful, those moments, because then you go, it's a bit like a medium, a fraudulent medium that's using a trick that you can catch them out on, and you go, okay, well, that's a trick.
Okay.
However, that's only part of the story, because ultimately what makes those events work is the personal psychological experience of the people are going through. So the big thing is, in essence, what it comes down to is if you're made to feel adrenaline, adrenaline kills pain.
Yeah.
You don't feel pain if you have adrenaline going through your body. Okay. So if you've got a bad ankle and a tiger walks into the room and you're running away from it, you're not worrying about your ankle, you forget the fact the ankle hurts. Yeah. So, I knew this, and I'd seen it work over and over again in these events. Mm. Sometimes through really firing people up, sometimes through a sort of quite hypnotic, say Benny Hinn's events, 4 hours. Sometimes of just sort of highs and lows and quiet meditative stuff.
Or organ swells and
organ swells and so on. Yeah. But bringing the audience to a certain point, I thought, well, I would like to do this in a secular setting.
Mm.
It's totally the wrong audience for it. they're not even coming expecting it. No. I'm going to have to tell them at some point.
You do try and keep it more or less a secret until...
I do, because the last thing I want is people turning up with their injured... Yeah, sure. I mean, it's horrendous, some of the things you see at these events. So it's the worst possible audience. They know I'm an atheist. They're sceptical like I am, most of them. And I want to not only create the effect of healing, but hopefully, fingers crossed, this is, pre the show starting, before I opened it, have people slain in the spirit and all of those other trappings that you see. So I went out on the first night, because there's no way you know it's going to work until you do it, armed with all this theoretical knowledge. Well, I know how it works in theory. And I thought, well, at the very least, if I can create some sort of adrenaline and someone's got a bad back, they're going to tell me they can't feel the pain because I know that works. Yeah. That's a chemical thing. Yeah. I'm still going to get them into that state. And I found out not only would somebody come up and say they didn't have a bad back, but they would also hit the floor when I touched them on the face, because they have a certain expectation. That's it. When you go to the events as a believer, you know what's supposed to happen. Yeah, yeah. So I show clips. Yeah. I show clips of people doing that. Yeah. So by the time they come up on stage, there's a certain
expectation
of what they're sort of supposed to do, which helps. And then it just started happening night after night. So somebody hadn't felt the left-hand side of their body for all their life. They had a paralysis thing when they were young, and for the first time they're in tears, they can feel one side of their body.
How does that make you feel, though, Darren? Because it's sort of like...
Well, this is it. This is the next... You start to think this is how you go a bit mad.
Yeah.
This is how you start to think. So, for example, this is only my opinion, of course, but when I look at Benny Hinn's performances, I don't think he uses the kind of tricks like, say, Grant was using on my foot. Mm. I think, watching it as somebody that knows these techniques, I think he's using some tricks, because when you tell somebody where the healing's happening, because the Lord is showing you a light, which I do in the show, and I took it directly from him, all right, you're either really doing that, or that bit's a trick.
Okay.
Because that's a different... You're in a different world than somebody just saying they're not feeling pain. So aside from that, it's a bit of a question mark over that, but I think he's relying... If you've got tens of thousands of people hyped up, if I can do it with 2,000 people who don't believe in it, you can do it with 30,000 people who absolutely believe in it. So there's no need for him to use trickery. Right. So the real meat of it is what people bring to it. And I am standing there and saying I don't believe in it and doing it at the same time, and it's working night after night. There is absolutely no... There's an old thing, isn't there, of like... extraordinary claims demand extraordinary evidence. So, if you're claiming something that's extraordinary, regardless of what you believe is possible, it's extraordinary to think that God can do that, or that you can make that happen on stage. Your proof has to be a little bit more than just, well, I'm saying I can do it. So, interestingly, no healer has ever in the history of this been able to produce any evidence that any actual organic change has happened. If you compare x-rays before and after, nothing changes. No one's arm's ever grown back. Nothing's happened beyond all the invisible things that you can't really see
anyway. So, for you, it all is ultimately, in some sense, psychological. The adrenaline rush, the things that happen. I mean,
in those events, yes. So that's what we're talking about. About those events where you look at things happening on stage and you go, "Well, that's amazing. How does that happen? Yeah. That is how that happens." Yeah. And regardless of what you believe about what God can do outside of that, those events are not what they appear to be. That can work perfectly well because me as an infidel is going out and doing that every night with non-believers, and it works perfectly well anyway.
What I just want to know, though, what happens to the people who've come up and said, I can move my knee again, I can do this, that, the other. Is the pain back in the morning generally?
Yeah, well, I get a mixture of responses. I would imagine 90% of people by the next morning or on the way home, it's sort of back to where it was. Mm-hmm. I've had emails and letters from people saying, just so you know, it's 3 months later and I can still move. There was we came across one story of when I was researching this for the TV show, one person who could say their life had actually been changed by the healing.
Really?
One person. That's interesting. And they had a terrible back condition and they were in a wheelchair and they were depressed and they had no life. Mm. After the healing, they were up, they were walking, their life had changed and they totally tested into this healing. Now, there was no difference in the x-rays, but what I see every night is what the psychological correlative of healing is, of suffering is. Yeah. So that story, again, we are story-forming creatures, aren't we? That story for that person had changed. Wonderfully for them, that their life had changed, which is great.
So in a sense, you could almost say you do believe in healing, you just believe it's something that occurs in a way that the person themselves produces.
Well, yeah, again, I think the... I don't know, the word healing becomes very... It's a very misleading word to use there. If you're talking about somebody... The other thing I think that's important is that if you suffer from something, that is your story, isn't it? It's very easy to go, well, I have this thing, I suffer from this, and it hurts me all the time. The reality is it doesn't hurt all the time. There are plenty of times when it won't. Things tend to come and go a little bit.
Yeah.
So another thing I do in the show quite a lot is say, how's that feeling right now?
Mm.
And the pressure then, first of all, they're stood in front of an audience. Yeah. They're being made to look at it now and to be mindful, to notice what's happening in the present moment. And again, time and time again, they can't believe that there's not only no pain, but they can move things more and so on. Yeah. So all of that is again, it's just that thing of it's the adrenaline and it's the kind of story that we tell ourselves that will very happily create what looks like a miracle if it's presented as such by a performer.
Does kind of show it, you know, being able to produce those results through secular means, as you described it. Does that therefore say, therefore, you can extrapolate that to all
therefore
claims of healing?
Heal.
Therefore, there is no actual healing going on ever from God. I'm guessing...
Of course. That's the question, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and clearly... All right, so what I remember somebody saying once, well, you can't... if you fake psychic powers, then by definition, psychic powers exist because you are faking them, so therefore they are something that exists because you're reproducing them.
Okay.
And that's really bad logic, isn't it? I am. So first of all, what I'm reproducing is fraudulent performances. So yes, the fraudulent performances exist, but that doesn't mean, first of all, it doesn't mean by definition that the thing is real just because I can reproduce it. Means the fraudulent performances are real in that they exist. so, of course, me being able to reproduce it doesn't therefore mean that it can't also exist in some other realm.
Yeah.
So I think then what you're into, sort of a couple of things really. First of all, what I think it comes down again to this idea of meaning. If you're talking about miracles, so how do you judge what a miracle is? Mm. Well, there are sort of two ways, an objective way and a subjective way. The objective way is like with the healers. It's actually very easy to tell whether those faith healers are doing anything because you can look at x-ray results, you can look at medical results, and okay, nothing happens. So you can actually go, objectively speaking, looking at that from the outside, there is no miracle happening. No one's going through an organic change that can't be explained by any other recourse to God having done it. So that's sort of easy in a way. The woollier areas, for example, if somebody has a remission in cancer, is that a miracle? It might absolutely be a miracle to that person's family, let alone if they happen to have sort of been praying for that. Mm. also in the same breath, of course, remissions happen. That's what remissions are. Yes. So then you're into a more subjective area, which again is about how you apply meaning to the to the event. That ultimately is always more compelling than data evidence and X-ray charts, because we're story-forming creatures. I remember, and the problem also with that, which is where I just think it's so interesting, is how terrible we are at dealing with things like large numbers and coincidences, because this, our storytelling part just always jumps in and takes over. There was a great story I heard of a guy that he worked for, like the AA or the RAC, and he was going out to fix a car in the middle of nowhere. Fixes the car, he's walking back to his truck or wherever he's going, and he walks past a phone box in the middle of nowhere which rings. Do you know this story?
It's in your book, I think.
Is it? So, oh, okay. Well,
so
I'll tell it.
Anyway, why I know it.
I'll tell it for those fools who haven't read the book. So the phone rings, and he goes in and picks it up, and it's bizarrely, it's the secretary at the office he's come from who's calling him to check something, and he says, "Well, so how on earth did you know to call this phone box?"
At this phone box, bizarre.
And she said, "No, I've just called you on your mobile." And he said, "No, you haven't. You called a phone box." Mm. And she looked down, she had his mobile number written down, but beneath it she had his tax number written down, and she dialed the wrong number. And the tax number just happened to be this phone box in the middle of nowhere that he just happened to be walking past at that time. Now, that is a phenomenal, extraordinary coincidence. Luckily, there's no meaning really you can ascribe to it other than what are the chances.
Yeah.
But what's interesting, when you look at that, it's a bit like winning the lottery. It's one in 14 million chance, but someone's going to do it. Likewise, walking past that phone box, it's such a ridiculously... Yeah. Let's say it's one in 14 million again of it happening. It's probably even less likely. But something that's one in a billion chance will happen one in a billion times anyway. So that's the nature of it being one in a billion chance of happening. So we're not very good at sort of managing those sorts of probabilities and those ideas of very unusual things will very occasionally happen anyway. So... unfortunately, to arrive at a kind of an objective, like a sort of a really clear way of saying that is a miracle or not. Like yesterday, for example, somebody came up on stage and they had a fractured foot.
Yes.
And now there was no pain and they could move the foot very, very comfortably. Now, to him, he may decide that's a miracle. But actually, you could easily judge that. Take an X-ray, has the foot changed? Well, no, it hasn't. Mm. So I'm presuming, unless I'm doing more than I think. So no, that isn't really a miracle. If the idea of a miracle just sort of becomes the story that you tell yourself and the meaning you apply to something, because, you know, if you dreamt the lottery numbers and then you play the lottery numbers and then you win, there's a meaning there that you're telling yourself and you forget all the times you might have dreamt numbers and the numbers didn't come up, then you're sort of, I mean, for me, you're sort of left with the thing where it's only a miracle because you've decided that it is. Which is fine, and that's how we live in life. Yes. We have to find meanings, and we have to tell ourselves stories. It doesn't leave the actual idea of a miracle as being particularly potent.
No.
A miracle to me is someone's arm grows back, or there's an actual organic difference. Right. So, I'm sceptical, but I do think those meanings, those stories we tell ourselves are hugely important, so it's not to decry them. I just think they're not...
Fine.
Doesn't leave much as a miracle actually is.
I suppose at one level, I came away challenged by what I saw and accepting that A, there are frauds, B, there are probably people out there kind of unwittingly employing the kinds of techniques you do, perhaps they just haven't realised it at some level, and you could probably, there's a probably group dynamics going on in events and all that sort of thing, but at the same time I still believe in miracles. I guess partly because I've just heard so many from people that I kind of trust and that weren't in kind of big crowd scenarios with lots of adrenaline pumping and so on. In fact, I did prepare one just to see what you thought of it, because I did a show on miracles, a debate show between a Christian and an atheist a while ago. And one of the listeners to my show got back to me with their story. And he said, his name's Alex, and I read it out on the show at the time, actually. But he said he doesn't kind of move in these sort of Christian circles. Mm. But when he was 15 years old, he went to a village in Peru.
Do you know how old Alex is now, just out of interest?
He's in his 30s, about the same age as me, mid-30s.
Okay.
And he says, he can't even remember now the name of the town or the organisation of the church he partnered with, so inevitably it's an anecdote and he doesn't have sort of pictures or anything. But I've met Alex, I don't think he's the kind of person who would lie about this sort of thing. And he said, the night before the event, we were praying for things we wished to see on the trip, and a girl asked to see God grow an eyeball into someone's head. Another person asked to see someone come back from the dead. That one didn't happen. The next morning, we went to a local church to preach the gospel and pray for the congregants. There were about a dozen of us, about five of whom I'm still in contact with. The rest, about 100 individuals, were local Peruvians. While we were waiting for the service to start, a man walked in with his eye missing. It was completely sunken in and scarred shut. The girl who prayed for the healing looked at me and said, "We have to pray for him." She wanted me to be there because our rule was a girl couldn't pray for a man alone and vice versa. At the time, we were sent out to pray for individuals in the congregation. The two of us walked over to the man and asked him what he'd like us to pray for. A translator confirmed he wanted us to pray that God would heal his missing eye. We agreed and placed our hands on top of his missing eye and prayed for him. At the end of our prayer, I felt something move underneath my hand, and I pulled it back to look at what was happening. His previously scarred shut eye was open, and underneath I could see the white of an eyeball. The man reached up and touched his eye and said something I didn't understand as the translator had moved on. Another person took our attention away and asked us to pray for them, so we did. After the prayer time was completed, the pastor of the congregation gave a message. During his message, the man we had prayed for came onto the stage and gave a testimony about his eye, which was translated for me. I was, at the time, told that he had lost his eyeball as a child in some sort of accident. As he spoke, his eye opened more and more. By the time we left the church that day, he had two functioning eyeballs, where once there was only one. That is the event in its entirety. In 2001, when it happened, our group had no smartphones and the cameras on our lame phones were poor at best. We didn't have phones with us anyway. We weren't supposed to bring them. As far as I know, no picture were taken by our group of the man before or after his eye was healed. Now, after being a party to this event, there are two ways I can go with it, says Alex. I can say that someone in our group or the missions organisation we partnered with heard that girl's prayer, set up an elaborate trick using some sort of makeup or special effects that caused the scar tissue to evaporate or come apart while our warm hands were over it. In this scenario, the man's likely an actor, and the pastor and maybe even the congregation at the church are likely in on it too. All of this to convince about a dozen children that God does miraculous things. Secondly, the other scenario is that God heard the prayer of a teenage girl and gifted her with a direct answer to it. And he just finishes by saying, "You have options of your own. You believe I'm telling the truth, and either I was tricked or it really happened. But whatever the case, I did witness something. And second, I'm a liar out to stick it to those atheists with all my anecdotal evidence. Like I said, I'd be pretty sceptical about a story of healing as well. But I was there when it happened. And regardless of what you think of me or this event, it doesn't change what I saw and experienced," says Alex. Who says he's generally a sceptical guy. In fact, he's of a theological persuasion, which more often is inclined to say none of that stuff exists anymore. In fact, interestingly. But he couldn't deny what he experienced.
Sure.
Now, I know this is an anecdote. We don't have any photographs, we don't have any x-rays and all the rest of it. But what do you make of Alex's story? Because I've always felt that's an interesting story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've since the moment you're sceptical about anything, whether it's a psychic, things that psychics tell you or do, you are... You always hear, "Well, how do you explain this? This extraordinary thing happened." I mean, it's an amazing story. As are all those things you hear, and I think it's sort of you can't really say any more than that because it is a story. It's a story that happened 15 years ago, and I'm sure that's his absolute honest to God memory of it. Mm. Whether it was something that, you know, for example, you know, I've had somebody come up on stage with a. So they've been paralysed down on one half of their body and then they can move it. So there is a world in which, and I'm not saying for a second this is what happened, but if the eye wasn't actually gone, but it was sort of closed and he hadn't been able to open it, and he'd sort of... There are many ways of where people are blind but not blind, or they can't see, and then they have, you know, limited... I mean, there's a whole world in which that's a very grey area, blindness is. There's certainly an event that may have happened, which sort of thing would happen on my stage, where somebody, for the first time, is opening their eye and able to see, right? That isn't an absent eyeball growing back, but that's something that may have happened, which has then, say, become that story, or not. If that is exactly what's happened, that's wonderful, but I'd sort of...
You'd need to be there.
No. Well, personally, I was going to say, I'd rather that God did something a bit more useful, right? Rather than one person's eyeball growing back in the middle of Peru. What about... some of the issues that we actually, you know, what about babies with AIDS? I mean, what about that? So kind of there is that as well, isn't there? I mean, I would say the other option is, what if that, you know, I remember things from 15 that I'm sure weren't quite exactly what happened, let alone when it's a religious belief and your whole identity that's part of it. I think it's so hard to say, and it's sort of not anyone's job to say, oh, it was just this, because they don't know any more than I do. And I think it's, those things are always... the stories that we take with us, and it's just simply impossible to answer. All I can say is, what I see all the time in my world is think something happens and people turn it into something else. That is a very natural part of being human. You can never say that to somebody because then they go, well, that wasn't what happened because of X, Y, Z.
I guess what I'm getting to, though, is just, are you convinced?
It's not a very useful miracle, is
no,
it?
No.
It's not very useful.
Well, I mean, it's quite useful for the man.
For the man. and for that girl.
The starfish in the sea or whatever. But.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
You're listening to Unbelievable, a special edition of the programme as we hear the second part of my interview with famed illusionist and mentalist Derren Brown, today talking about his most recent stage show, Miracle. And in regards to that story I told Derren and asked for his reaction to about Alex and the eyeball growing back into his head, after we concluded our interview, he actually emailed me and with a thought he'd had about it. He said, I had a thought about that healing eye story you told me from that chap Alex. When I was a student, I saw a magician perform a trick whereby he pushed a lit cigarette through someone's jumper and out the other side, still lit. When I later became a magician, I came across a well-known trick whereby a lit cigarette could be pushed into a jumper and then caused to vanish without any damage, but I had no clue how he had seemingly pushed it through. Years later, I met the magician in question and asked him about it, and he said he'd only ever performed the more familiar trick with the vanish and had no idea either how anyone would have been able to push it through. I have a very clear visual memory of him pushing the cigarette through the jumper and he never did it. I can see the red jumper in my mind's eye, see the whole trick, and it just didn't happen. I also realised that I'd performed the more familiar trick slash vanish a lot as a magician, and people who had seen it had asked me to show their friends the one where you pushed the cigarette through the jumper. They too were misremembering right after the trick what actually happened, even people in groups. So there's multiple eyewitness testimony too for you. I think the key is that the story of the cigarette through the jumper is simpler, clearer and more compelling than the cigarette is pushed into the jumper and vanishes. Therefore, people, including me, tend to remember the more compelling story. I would have sworn blind, no pun intended, that I saw the trick that never happened. I'd love it if you could include this story somehow, perhaps as an addendum to my response, but I'll leave it with you. Well, I did include it there, Derren. And yes, it's interesting the way we can misremember events. Alex obviously feels he has a very clear memory, can't misremember seeing an eyeball grow back into someone's socket. But in any case, your response is also welcome, of course, to today's programme. You can email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk. And I'll be back with the final part of my conversation with Derren Brown in a moment's time. Meet the man who can manufacture miracles in the latest edition of Premier Christianity magazine. Famed illusionist Derren Brown's TV and stage shows have wowed audiences across the UK. He was once a Christian and, in our exclusive interview, talks about faith, doubt, and why his latest show targets charismatic healing evangelists. Plus, we've advice on pastors and pedestals, what to do when leaders fall, and, as university season begins, how your church can reach students. All that plus much more. Why not request our September edition absolutely free at premierchristianity.com/freesample.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of this week's Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, here on Premier Christian Radio as part of Faith Explored. And we're concluding the second part of a conversation I had with mentalist and illusionist Derren Brown. I hope you've enjoyed it wherever and however you're listening and wherever you are on the faith spectrum as well. And if you enjoy the programme, why not download the podcast on a regular basis, as many, many other people do. PremierChristianRadio.com/Unbelievable. Links there, of course, to more features, videos, articles. If you want to explore these issues further, you can find some fabulous discussions and debates on the issues of the resurrection and the miraculous and many other things besides in the back catalogue of the show. You can also find links there to Unbelievable the Conference on DVD and audio CD, as well as the digital download edition available around the world as well. PremierChristianRadio.com/Unbelievable. I'm going to be joined at the conclusion of my conversation with Derren again by Dave Rose, Jamie Cuttridge and Ruth Jackson of Premier as we reflect on this week's part of the conversation. So here is the final part of that conversation as we look at the burden of proof and whether Derren could ever be persuaded of a miracle or Christianity.
I guess what I'm getting to is from your perspective, are you convinced that all of such apparently amazing stories are in the end going to be a bit of exaggeration, a misunderstanding, or simply someone being deceived because that is ultimately the worldview you're approaching it from, I suppose. That
okay. Well, the key thing here is, I'm sure you know, there is this question of where does a burden of proof kind of lie? Who has to come up with the with the evidence? And if claims are being made that are in any way extraordinary, it's up to those people on that side to go, here's the really good evidence. It's not up to the people on the other side to go to prove why it doesn't happen.
I'm not sure I agree with you, because I often hear this sort of atheist sort of thing, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. I think that depends rather on your worldview.
Okay.
If you're open to a supernatural explanation for something, if you believe there is a God,
yes,
then
it is
you need evidence.
Yes.
I need evidence that the resurrection is a plausible hypothesis for the facts surrounding the narratives in those books.
Yes.
I believe there is enough plausible evidence such that if you're not already closed off to a supernatural explanation, sort of by, you know, de facto, then actually it's the best explanation out there, because the naturalistic explanations kind of constantly run into problems with other aspects of the narrative. So for me, I sometimes wonder if that gets a bit overused, the extraordinary claims demand extraordinary evidence. It kind of depends on your starting point, surely.
Unless I'm misunderstanding, I think it's a different point. I think you're right in that we all work from evidence, and I think it's not... I don't kind of buy it when, you know, an atheist says, well, I work from evidence and you guys just work from sort of anecdote or whatever, because we all work. We all like to feel we work from evidence. We all have our form of evidence, that is. But if you're dealing with not a closed circle of your own worldview, but if you are saying to the rest of the world that doesn't share your belief, here is an extraordinary thing. If I say I have got... It's like I always think it's like a magician, particularly when you're dealing with, you know, frauds. But if a magician says, I am sawing this woman in half and I'm doing it for real, it's not a trick, I'm doing it for real. I'm actually pulling her into and putting her back together again. You're going to go, well, okay, great. But if you want me to take that seriously, you've got to come up with some evidence for
yes.
that. And if he says, if you want evidence, come and see my show. I do it every night. Yeah. You'd go, well, that's not really evidence, because that's just the thing that we're questioning. If you say you can do it with any woman, then let me provide a woman. If you say you can do it with any saw or any table, then we'll provide. Then if you can do it, under conditions that we both agree are fair, then yes, of course.
Yeah.
And that's the best model that we sort of have for deciding, sort of trying to get some sort of objective standpoint outside of individual worldviews as to whether or not that thing sort of stands. So it is, if somebody says, I can talk to the dead, or I can heal, or this, or something is happening that's miraculous, within that worldview, of course not. Your level of what you demand as evidence is totally different. But in terms of saying to the rest of the world, here's my claim and take it seriously, then it is up to you. It's not up to everybody else to go, well, we have to prove that you can't do that.
Yeah,
it's not up to people to prove that.
I agree with that. But I wouldn't say that when it comes to the is there a God, is there not a God thing, that we automatically start at there's not a God and you prove to me there is one. I think if we're going to talk about a neutral place, we're saying, we don't know. We're agnostic, let's say.
Yeah.
And I think you go from there to, well, I think there's evidence in this direction for God.
Sure,
and I think
sure.
there's evidence in this direction against God.
Yeah.
And we kind of, I sometimes feel like...
But we're talking about miracles here, aren't
well,
we?
Well, okay, maybe I've crossed from one to the other to some extent. But in terms of supernatural claims, do we automatically start with a kind of a naturalistic viewpoint that all that we're going to assume... that all that exists are natural forces, matter in motion, and then you've got to show me evidence that that's not the case? Or do we say that... Because I kind of see that as an assumption.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I see the atheist viewpoint as not the sort of natural, neutral viewpoint. I see that's got its own sort of set of assumptions and beliefs to some extent. It does say, you know, that the universe just is, I think, at some level. And... for me, that's one area where I find that hard to kind of grasp. I think the universe is crying out for an explanation beyond itself. And I think there are other arguments for God which kind of tally against atheism. I think there are some incoherences within atheism. We won't go into all that. But I guess all I'm saying is it fair to start from the theist being the one to shoulder all the burden of proof can't we start from somewhere sort of more in the middle where we say, okay, it could be either way, you know, sort of thing?
I think it is a different question. I think what science does some things very well and some things sort of it's not quite made for. Science is about the language of time and space and cause and effect, and those are all things that Kant showed us that sort of allow us to organize the world into a meaningful and predictable pattern and navigate our way through it and kind of say, well, this is how it works. It looks at relationships between things. It's not very good at articulating what Kant called the noumenal world or whatever whatever would sort of lie underneath that, any kind of objective truth beyond what we can perceive. It's not very good at that. So when science, in inverted commas, says this is true, this is all there is, it naturally can ring a little bit hollow to our sort of romantic souls or another part of us that also goes, well, yes, but what about beneath
truth
all that?
And beauty
And it's not that those things are, you know, science can still, you know, absolutely give us interesting information about these things, but it's something resonates in us. And I think that's...
I guess I'm interested, because we must start to draw to a close, and I'm taking so much of your time, but as an atheist yourself, do you ultimately how much of a hardcore atheist are you? Do you really believe that all that exists ultimately is matter in motion, physical forces? Because, and simply what you're doing on stage is just doing things with a very complex sort of organic brains that have evolved over millions of years. But that's it. There's nothing beyond that. There's no area beyond the purely physical. Because not all atheists do go that far to a kind of strict,
well, all atheists means that you just don't happen to believe in God. That really is all it means. It brings no agenda. A.C. Grayling talks about if you don't collect stamps, you are an aphilatelist. If you were labelled an aphilatelist and told that, you therefore had some sort of agenda, it would be ridiculous. It's just something you don't have.
I know, though not many aphilatelists write books on the subject.
True.
But accepting that, though.
So, look, I in my show and other shows that I've done, I tend to debunk things. Mainly, it's sort of in that sort of psychic realm. In this show, it happens to be faith healing, which is in more of the sort of evangelical realm. My job in those areas is to kind of reproduce something and go and say to people, look, if I just spoke to you about why these things are probably just not real, why there's no evidence to believe in them, you wouldn't take any notice, because ultimately seeing those things is so wonderful and amazing that that it's more compelling than somebody standing there and saying it's not real. So I try and do them. I try and recreate them. Often I have to do a better job because the audience is not quite on side in the same way. So I, on a one-by-one basis, go, here is how that thing can be very well replicated without any recourse to a spiritual belief, whether that's religious or whatever. That is my job. Now, what I always hear when I do that is, oh, well, does that mean that then nothing exists? First of all, that's not my job, and that's not what I'm saying. That's beyond the scope of what you're doing. However, the middle ground, which I think is important, is that the sort of things I'm debunking are people making claims, extraordinary claims. They can put you in touch with your dead grandmother. They can heal you because God is going to work through them and do that, or whatever. Those are specific claims, and claims like that can be pulled apart, and they do demand a higher level of evidence than somebody that's claiming something that isn't at all interesting or miraculous. So I think that by replicating those things and going, look, you don't have to. It's just giving people more information. Irrespective of what somebody wants to believe when they go and see Benny Hinn, at least if they go in knowing that I can, this, that other guy can do it too. And you know, that's useful information. What you do with that is up to you. I don't happen to believe particularly that, because I think what gets left, if you start to remove all the things that can be very comfortably explained through suggestion and through adrenaline or through trickery or all those other things, or just sheer coincidence, you're not left with very much. So yes, I am, of course, I'm skeptical that whatever remains, whether it amounts to much, but that isn't really what I'm doing, and that's, you know, that is up to people to draw their own conclusions. But I think
you sound reasonably agnostic in that sense.
No, I'm not, because I do agree with Dawkins that you at some point you might as well go, at least for yourself, well, no, as a grown-up person armed with this information, right, I can make an informed decision.
Yeah.
And for myself, no, there is no reason to believe in that. However, that's a lot of information and experience I've got that other people don't have, so they're not going to take that on board unless they also have my experience. So the best I can do is say, look, at least these guys, you don't have to believe they're doing it for real, because that can very, very easily be faked. So at least if you know it can be faked, you've got that information.
Yeah. And you're, as you said, you're kind of waiting for someone to give you the positive evidence for a god or whatever. You're going to kind of assume in the absence of that all that exists is the matter in motion of the universe, sort of thing. I mean, I guess I'm just interested in accepting absolutely that all atheism means is, you know, I don't believe in God. Do you go one step further? Are you a naturalist in that sense, in the sense of, and all that does exist is matter in motion? Because I sometimes think that atheists haven't thought through, they might say, oh, well, I'm an atheist, I don't believe in God, but they haven't then elucidated what they therefore do think the universe consists in. Because sometimes, you know, you get surveys where people tick atheist and then also tick believing in quite interesting spiritual things going on.
So no, I don't. I also think that we have to find, for our own mental health, a sense of meaning in life,
right,
because we're story-forming creatures. And if we don't have a story in place that makes us feel happy, we're not going to feel happy, and that's no way.
And you don't begrudge that to Christians who...
No, I think Christianity does that. It can do that very well, and I think at its heart, Schopenhauer talks about it being a kind of a really useful sort of folk myth in a way, but it has to be presented as real in order for it to work, in order for it to have a real effect. And that might sound very patronising, of course, if you happen to believe that it's real, but I think that it is at its heart for me. You know, I think it is articulating something that is wrong to just sort of dismiss out of hand and scoff at, because what atheists are scoffing at generally are the dogmatised, politicised thing we've ended up with now, because
institutional religion.
We live in a world now where the culture is showing how things can be scientifically validated. We have things like archaeology with a K, where they go out and try and show where the ark actually sort of ended up, and things that are sort of just a bit embarrassing and pointless, aren't they? So I think at its heart, it's articulating a sense of story and meaning that I think is useful, and of not up to me to say whether anybody should or not take anything from that, but of course it's there to be enormously useful to people, I'm sure.
And just finally, we talked about evidence, we talked about what maybe might count as a miracle for you, a limb regrowing completely or whatever. Is there any evidence that could bring you back to a belief in God? I mean, what would that evidence look like? Because as someone who, in a sense, can see how easily deceived we are anyway by the things that look apparent in the front of our face, I'm almost wondering what sort of evidence would be required, what that extraordinary evidence would be.
Then I think it would have to go back to, I'd have to, you know, the point is, if you do want to sort of find that bit of evidence, it has to be objective evidence. So you have to do away with all of your own subjective experience, which sadly means any kind of miraculous event in the ordinary sense, like cancer remissions or whatever, or even having a vision or anything that can be explained. Again, that has to go out the window. You'd either have to, literally see someone's eye growing in their head in front, you know.
But even that wouldn't tell you God exists.
No, exactly. It wouldn't tell you God exists.
It's not getting you all
exactly,
the way
certainly,
there.
Let alone the Judeo-Christian Muslim God.
I mean, I've heard Richard Dawkins say, well, if God appeared to me and Jesus said to me, or the stars lined up.
That wouldn't prove it either.
Be other explanations. Yeah, exactly. It's almost like an impossible burden of proof almost.
No, because you come down to, at least as I said, this as it started off our conversation, it comes down to, for me at least, whether or not the resurrection was a real event.
Okay.
Now, I don't know how, I don't know what sort of proof that would be that would give you that. However, the fact that it is so sort of you'd think it would be crystal clear. If that really was the crux of it, and that was our one thing that we were being given, you'd think it would be pretty clear and evident. Mm. The fact that it's given to us, even if you're being charitable, some very big question marks over its historical and validity. I think that's not a very hopeful sign. But I think, yes, it would probably have to be there. I'd have to do away with my own subjective experience, because all that can all be explained elsewhere.
We'll have to leave it there. Mm. I really appreciate the amount of time you give me. I've overstayed my welcome.
But no, this has been delightful. I hope you can edit it down to a more digestible length for people. But it's been great talking to you.
Darren, thank you so much for joining me.
Lovely to meet you. Thank you, Justin.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, that was the final part of my two-part interview with Darren Brown, and well, not edited down really. You really heard the whole thing there. And if you want to get the one that's in a nutshell, why not go to the Premier Christianity Magazine website, where we've got the interview written up by myself, and you can sort of browse that in a bit more of a condensed form. PremierChristianity.com, and also, of course, you can find it in the latest magazine if you want to get a free sample copy. PremierChristianity.com/freesample. We'll send one to your doormat. Now, normally here on Unbelievable, I moderate conversations between Christians and non-Christians, but for the last 2 weeks, we've heard this interview with the famed illusionist and mentalist Darren Brown. You can tell me what you thought about it by emailing unbelievable@premier.org.uk. There's also the Twitter and Facebook pages for Unbelievable. Always to get in touch with today's show, and you can subscribe to the podcast as well at premierchristianradio.com/Unbelievable, and listen back, of course, to last week's programme as well, the first part of this conversation. But right now, joining me in the studio again are Dave Rose, station manager here at Premier Christian Radio, and self-confessed Darren Brown fanboy, Jamie Cutteridge, also editor of Premier Youth Work and Children's Work magazines, who went to see Darren's show Miracle while it was touring, so I'm sure he'll enlighten us to what he thought about the whole thing. And Ruth Jackson joins us again, who works alongside Jamie and also heads up Premier's Youth Apologetics. Welcome back to the studio, everyone. And glad you could come back for this week's second part of the interview. I guess this is where we really hit some of the big issues regarding the Miracle stage show. Now, last week, Jamie, you said that you went along to see it with your wife and some non-Christian friends. I was just really interested to hear what they made of the whole thing, because it's phenomenal. Whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, what he does is amazing. But how is it going to strike a non-Christian?
What was interesting, I guess, is that their first response was to ask me and Helen what we thought of it. Mm. You know, it was kind of coming out, being like, well, how was that for you guys? Because actually it was a similar group of people with whom we'd gone to see Darren Brown a couple of years before, when he'd done, you know, all the, you know, when names appear in newspapers and a number appears, you know, all the kind of classic Darren Brown stuff. We'd seen him do it before. So we go and see this show, and I didn't know what we were going for, and I don't think they did. And Darren was kind of, he was very tight-lipped about what this show was, and there's a reason you only did the interview at the end of the tour, because he didn't want people to know what it was. So none of us really knew what we were expecting. And then when we came out and everyone, I think for most people, it probably just felt like another Darren Brown show.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like he was particularly point scoring or anything like that. It was just, isn't it amazing how he can make people feel like that, or he can do this? But their main response was, well, what did you guys think? And I think for me and Helen, we kind of had a conversation about it, and I think it probably made us feel uncomfortable in all the right kind of ways. Mm-hmm. It was amazing, and it did remind me of so many events I've been in, and so many claims I've seen people make, and so many apparent healings I've seen, and I don't know to what extent it really challenges my belief that God can do miracles, because I think the key with it, and Darren would say this himself, him proving that people can manipulate other people to think they've been healed doesn't mean healings can't happen. And so I guess the key is not to throw the healed baby out with the soiled bathwater, as it were. I use a horrible metaphor.
Wow. I mean, what he said in the interview was that, as far as he's concerned, it shows that what happens in what he calls those events, by which I think he means the big healing rally with the, you know, shiny suited televangelist. he thinks that you can know from what I've just done that that's not happening. Now, again, them, it could be debatable. You know, maybe God even uses the person who we all think is a bit of a corny, and
maybe God uses Darren Brownhill people. Like, you know what I mean? Imagine, like, if we believe that God is capable of that stuff, and we believe that somehow people are putting their faith in something at Darren Brown's show, like, there's nothing really to stop God healing people with a bad back at a Darren Brown show.
Well, there isn't. But what I think his view obviously is that no, it's the adrenaline rush that did that, and more often than not, it's a very temporary solution. Now I think for me, absolutely, if there's any lesson to learn from Darren Brown's show, it's that if you are putting on something which you're claiming is about people receiving a touch from God and having a miracle and whatever, do it in a way that's responsible, and where you're kind of not just assuming that if someone comes up and says, I feel better now, the only way, and claim that as a miracle, when actually you need to go back the next day, a week later, a month later, and find out actually did that last? Because otherwise, I think we're all open to that charge of simply accepting things which actually may turn out to be just a psychological adrenaline rush, whatever.
It'd be interesting to see what he makes of kind of people who are healed, or, you know, anecdotal evidence, whatever, or even sort of in a place where someone gets healed, where it's not one of those kind of hypey events, if it's just like, you know, two people play.
Well, that was kind of why I brought the Alex story of the guy with, you know, and what is actually, if it were true, if it happened, as Alex says it did, a very physical change. So not just my bad back went away, but he claims he saw an eyeball regrow into a socket. Because that is, you know, both a, it's not in a kind of hyped up thousands of people together type of scenario.
But it was still in quite like a big church service.
I think he said about 100 people were there. So yeah. I guess it's still a, but I'm assuming, you know, in up the mountainside in Peru, they don't have smoke machines and a swooshy organ or whatever. Maybe they did, who knows? But but the point being, I suppose, I wanted to kind of give an example where it wasn't in that kind of, you know, big tent revival kind of environment where that these things also happen. And that's where I actually hear, when it comes to people who claim to have had some kind of lasting miracle, it usually is quite often been in some quite non-sensational,
intimate
kind of
way.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, Dave, where do you land on this? Are you, I describe myself at the outset as an evangelical Christian with charismatic leanings.
Yeah.
Do you have any leanings yourself?
I lean all over the place, mate.
Less than you used to.
Less than, sure, that's a good point. Good point. Well, I think for me, I agree with Jamie's point about the, I mean, with a less disgusting analogy about the baby in the bathwater, but I think that's fundamentally where I'm at with it.
Yeah.
You know, I do believe that God can heal. I do believe that God does heal. I do also believe, though, that we, and I think this is the main lesson out of the Darren interview and out of the show, is that we do need to question more as Christians. And I think sometimes we take far too much that we see at those kind of events, in inverted commas, at face value. And I think for me, it's a question of, this goes back to what we were saying last week, a question of honesty, a question of truth, a question of there being an objective truth, but one that we have to be very careful and very skeptical about how we approach. I don't think there's any problem at all with Christians approaching faith healing events with a skeptical hat on, because actually what you're doing is approaching that event looking for truth. And I think that's a very Christian biblical concept. I think too often we look at those events wanting to believe something and not necessarily looking at what's true. And as I said last week, I think if Darren Brown is able to recreate the effects of a big faith healing event with a far more skeptical crowd than you would find at a genuine, in inverted commas, faith healing event, then we have to ask ourselves some serious questions about how much of what we see is genuine and how much isn't, bearing in mind that there are bound to be, if it's possible, there are bound to be people out there who will be doing it for money, and who will be doing it with an exploitative hat on.
Yes.
And So we do need to ask more questions.
Well, it is time to go to a quick break. So we'll be back with Dave, Jamie and Ruth to continue to pick over the interview that we had with Derren Brown recently. And I'd be interested to hear what you thought about it as well. Don't forget, you can email in unbelievable@premier.org.uk.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So welcome back to the final part of today's Unbelievable here on Premier Christian Radio as part of Faith Explored. Towards the end of today's show, I'm going to be squeezing in a conversation with Rico Tice and Barry Cooper, the people behind Christianity Explored, about their new video-based evangelistic course, Life Explored. If you come back next week on the show, you're going to be hearing Unbelievable live in the USA. Yes, my live discussion recorded out in California with an audience of Unbelievable listeners present between atheist Ryan Bell and Christian guest Sean McDowell. So that'll be very exciting to be able to hear what happened during my trip to the States. If you do enjoy conversations between Christians and non-Christians, don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast of Unbelievable at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And as you will have heard if you're a regular listener, we're currently holding over our normal section for hearing listeners' feedback for the rest of September when normal programming resumes. But I thought it would be helpful to again talk through the conversation we've just heard with Derren Brown with a few hand-selected people from here at Premier Towers, and all of whom have been very excited, as I said, about hearing Derren interviewed. So continuing to talk to Jamie Cutteridge, Dave Rose and Ruth Jackson. For those who haven't been, but as I understand it, there will be a TV airing of the Miracles show near to Christmas time, and people will be able to see it for themselves. Jamie and I, we've seen it. It is pretty phenomenal what he manages to do. There's stuff happening up on stage where people are claiming to have been healed of various aches and pains and feelings and so on. The night I was there, it was a guy who had some kind of a sprained foot, and he said he could walk on it perfectly fine and walk around, and that was great. All presumably explained, as far as Derren's concerned, by this adrenaline rush and so on. But he was even sort of calling out things in the audience as well. Someone's been healed of tinnitus, and someone says, yes, I normally hear this ringing and it's not there anymore and so on. There was one thing which I think was a trick with a woman who he claimed to be able to show was able to heal her short-sightedness, and then another guy who he kind of transferred it to and stopped him seeing, being able to read the program and this kind of thing. So I think there was definitely some illusion and stuff going on, as well as the kind of more suggestion and adrenaline rush stuff that he was also playing on. What were some of the big takeaways, Jamie, that you had from that in terms of
well, he plays it very straight stuff, doesn't he? Do you know what I mean? He kind of comes out as a character almost for the second half of the show, and there is Holy Spirit organ music in the background. He gets everyone to stand up and close their eyes and kind of does a kind of visualization technique to kind of get people in the right frame of mind. And so he takes people through a journey that ends with people feeling like they're healed, which is kind of what happened. You know, he has studied those faith healing events very carefully. It's not accidental that people end up with these feelings of doing it, of being healed. And you're right, in particular, the one where the person is made to think that suddenly they can't read something that they've previously been able to read. My mate was actually pulled out of the audience a different night, and he was put on stage and he was given the program and he could no longer read it. And you know, there are obviously tricks that you can do that there. But yeah, people weren't going along with it as kind of like, oh, it's just part of the show. People genuinely were feeling better. People genuinely felt like that their shoulder was kind of loosening up, or all those kind of things. And also, you know, it was the same kind of healings we kind of see at these events, is the thing. Apart from, you know, he didn't tell anyone who was sitting there in a wheelchair to get out of a wheelchair. Be interesting to see how he'd feel about trying to make someone do that, I guess. But
it would be. I guess in the end that is where the uncomfortableness lies for those who are familiar with events of different kinds where healing claims are taking place on the stage, and why, as I say, I think it's important therefore to follow it up. And if you think a healing is taking place, you've got to not just assume that that's the end of the story, but you've got to actually show. And one of the reasons I do believe miracles take place and healings take place, because there's plenty of stories of people for whom there has been a permanent change and so on. I know that medical evidence can be extremely difficult to come across to kind of verify a lot of the kinds of healing that people do claim. But nonetheless, that permanent change happens. I think there's plenty of people who can lay claim to that. What about the effect that this has, I suppose, on someone's faith? Where do you go with this? If Ruth, you're someone who has come from a charismatic background, suddenly you're presented with Darren sort of debunking apparently a lot of what seems to go on. Where do you go after that? I suppose it depends on kind of how much your faith is dependent on those kinds of experiences and those sorts of stories.
It's interesting. I never experienced any of this sort of thing until I was sort of 14, 15 at Souls 5, and I was freaked out. But like Jamie said last week, Mike Pilavachi was amazing at explaining those things. But I think he's got some really... I think he helps us to challenge some of the things that we should be challenging, actually, and just thinking about how we do some things. One of the, I guess, the concerns that he didn't mention in the thing, but may have been one of his sort of one of the reasons behind doing his show is the fact that, you know, as Christians, perhaps some of these healing rallies or whatever you want to call them sort of give the impression that God will heal everyone. And if he hasn't healed everyone, then there's something wrong with you or there's something wrong with the way you're praying. And actually, I think as Christians, we need to be aware of the dangers of that and realizing that actually, of course, God wants healing for everyone. He, you know, desires everyone to come to him, but we do live in a broken world. And actually, you know, with prayer and things like that, we've got to hold that in contention of, yes, we want to see these amazing things happen, but...
Is it kind of along the lines of what he was saying when I described that miracle of the eyeball regrowing in the socket, and he said, but why would God do that and not heal, you know, babies with AIDS and that kind of thing? There was a sense in which I think it wasn't just that he doesn't believe miracles happen, it's that the kind of miracles that do happen feel like, well, God should be doing more than that in that sense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not that God can do one and not do the other. I think, you know, if God's God, he could heal the baby with AIDS and the eyeball. And I think I don't think we ever will know why some people are healed and some people aren't. But what we can know is that it's not because he loves some people more and he loves some people less. But I do think we need to take some of Darren Brown's stuff seriously. And I think, you know, we need to make sure that we're not hyping things up. And I think it's tricky, isn't it? Because if you're in a situation like that, there will kind of be natural adrenaline and things like that. But I just think, actually, rather than thinking of what Darren Brown's doing as a negative thing, I think perhaps we need to think, what are the real questions that he's raising and how can we bring that into our church situations?
No, I agree. And just going back to that, the point about the, you know, why doesn't God do more, you know, bigger, more important miracles? You know, I think I would ask, how do we know that he doesn't?
Right. Yeah,
because we have, you know, in science, you have a control experiment and then you have the effect and you compare the two. And, you know, the problem with life sometimes is that there's no control experiment, right? Mm. This is it. How do we know that God isn't intervening in all kinds of situations every day? We have no control experiment.
Well, that's true, yes.
So I just think...
You say we need more faith healing rallies so we can clearly see what's going on.
I'm saying, how do we know that God isn't doing things that we're not aware of?
Yeah, sure.
All
yeah,
the time.
No, that's true. My own take on this as well is that I kind of have moved towards a theological position over the years where I don't... believe that I believe that God is not just able to, God could do anything, he could heal anybody and so on, but A, there may be particular reasons God has for not always choosing to heal someone in the first place, but B, there is actually a spiritual battle going on, and I think this is clearly outlined in scripture, that there is actually almost a cosmic battle of some kind going on that we don't see, but which we are involved in because we're Christians and because we pray and because of all that, where actually the ability that healing doesn't necessarily flow in some places where because of the spiritual forces that exist there. Now, I'm sure Darren would think that's absolutely kooky, weird, and whatever, but the point is, if you live in a certain worldview where you believe in the existence of spiritual forces, demonic forces, God and so on, then actually there may be an explanation for why you don't always see the healings that you think God should be doing at times. And it may not be actually necessarily God's fault in that sense, but something about the way that the spiritual world works.
And I think, you know, just coming back to something you said right at the end of that conversation with Darren today, I think if God did start healing more babies with AIDS, to use Darren's example, I'm not convinced Darren would say, oh, look, there's God healing babies with AIDS. There'd be another explanation found for it. Mm. And so you therefore end up saying, OK, well, unless the world is perfect and nothing bad ever happens, then you can find naturalistic explanations if you want to. And I think ultimately that's the problem.
Yeah. We are out of time, folks. Thank you very much for agreeing to be with me. I think we can all agree that Darren is a lovely guy who was extremely polite and nice about the... In fact, he even tweeted after we'd had our conversation to say he'd enjoyed it. If you're listening, Darren, thank you for agreeing to be interviewed about the whole thing.
And if you're listening, Darren, come to my house for tea. You're very welcome.
And well, I hope we can do something again down the line because...
House for tea?
Well, maybe.
You're very welcome.
All pile round Dave's for that.
I think you've put him off ever coming to well done.
But my thanks again to Jamie, Dave and Ruth. Before we close out today's show, we've still got a couple of bonus guests to come. Going to be hearing from Rico Tyson, Barry Cooper in just a moment's time. But if you would like to read the interview that I had with Darren Brown, my write-up of it, then do go to premierchristianity.com. That's the website of Premier Christianity magazine, to read it there. And why not ask for a free sample copy? It is a beautiful magazine and I think you'll really appreciate getting hold of it. premierchristianity.com/freesample. We'll send you a free sample copy in the post if you request one online. And I'd love to hear your feedback as well. Unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Check out the Facebook and Twitter accounts as well at UnbelievableJB and facebook.com/UnbelievableJB. All those ways to get in touch, links, videos, articles, and of course the podcast to subscribe to from the show page at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, it's great to be joined now by Rico Tice and Barry Cooper. And the guys have both been involved in new material coming out of the Stable of Christianity Explored, which has long been a popular course for introducing people to Christianity, a seeker course for people who are looking to explore the claims of Christianity. But you've developed something quite new. And it's launching this September. Rico and Barry, welcome along. Rico, you're involved at All Souls Langham Place, which is where the material for Christianity Explored, Discipleship Explored and so on has all come from. Do you want to just give us a very brief in a nutshell, for those who perhaps haven't interacted with that material, what that all is and where it came from?
Well, we basically look at Jesus in Mark's Gospel. And it originated from a guy called Michael Bennett in Australia. But it has just always been a course, Christianity Explored, where we say, look, ask any question you like. Mm-hmm. We're unashamedly going to get Mark's Gospel open. And really, there are three great themes in Mark's Gospel. Who is Jesus? Why did he come? What does it mean to follow him? And we found people really enjoy looking for themselves at Jesus, asking any question they like. But at the same time, you've got leaders and others who are there. So it's a journey together. You're not just alone as you do that. You do that in groups. And that's where the Alpha course was great for us, because we looked across and saw what the way the group work on Alpha was going on and how good it was. And so we've picked that up.
What would you say, just staying with Christianity Explored for a minute, are the distinctives between, say, a course like Alpha, which many people are obviously familiar with, and Christianity Explored?
Well, of course, with Christianity Explored in Mark's Gospel, we go through the Gospel. We let the Gospel tell the Gospel. So we say, here is Jesus in Mark's Gospel. This is the original document. Have a look. What do you think? Alpha is more of a helicopter ride round the key doctrines in the Christian faith. And so what we wanted to do was say, well, let's just look at Jesus in Mark and see what you make of him.
So Life Explored, is this a sort of a post
The Christianity Explored, is it a pre-Christianity Explored? Where's this coming from? Perhaps you want to start us off on this, Barry.
Yeah, well, it's pre, post, it's independent, it's really whatever you would like it to be. We're aware that some people who use Christianity Explored already will be very familiar with the way Life Explored works, but with this we really wanted to reach for people who've maybe had no experience of that before, and also we're reaching for non-Christians further back as well with Life Explored.
And now, is this because you've found that actually a lot of people maybe who you'd like to see do a Christianity Explore course don't really sort of have any biblical understanding to start with, that we're needing to kind of, I don't know, take it back a notch for a lot of people in today's society?
Yeah, Don Carson, an old professor of mine, tells the story of somebody walking through, one of his students walking through the city, and a guy just walks up to her and says, "Oh," and she's got a crucifix around her neck, and he just walks up to her and says, "Oh, why have you got a plus sign around your neck?" And, you know, culturally, that's where I think increasingly we are. We can't assume any biblical literacy. We can't assume that when we use even a word like God, that people have in mind what we have in mind as Bible-believing Christians. And so we're wanting to reach those people where they are. We don't want to assume anything. And really just ask the very simple question, you know, what is it that you're living for? And is it working out for you?
So what form do the Life Explored sessions take, Rico?
Well, what we've done is, because we went through Mark's Gospel with Christianity Explored, with Life Explored, there is a bit of a helicopter ride around the Bible going
okay.
on. So week one, we look at Genesis chapter 1. And the creation. Week two, we look at the fall, Genesis 3. So these key milestones in Scripture. So we're hoping that as people come on the course, having looked at Jesus in Mark, they now get an overview of what's going on in the Bible with the theme of idolatry.
Okay.
So idols are good things that become God things, which of course is a theme right through Scripture. And we're picking that up. So if you like, in Christianity Explored, we've done sinners law-breaking. Here's your life up on the wall. Look what you've done. That God is merciful, but he's also a judge. He cares what happens in his world. He will judge. Please go to the cross for forgiveness. When it comes to Life Explored, we're saying these are the idols. This is what you've... The reason the wrong stuff has happened is you've allowed your hearts to chase after wrong stuff. Let's unpack that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds kind of like a bit sort of, ooh, you know, I'm going to be going along to be told what a sinner I am or something. But in fact, the material, as far as I've seen it, and you've got some really amazing videos that accompany this, is very much about, I guess, engaging people where they're at and in their kind of perhaps feeling, I'm quite happy, thanks, I'm all right, mate. Don't really need God, Jesus or anything else in my life. So how are you kind of getting to this, what is it, this end of the day, quite hard stuff to kind of think about and think through?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, what we say is, you know, Life Explored is a 7-session series that asks if there's more to life. You know, is there, you know, C.S. Lewis said that we feel hunger because there's such a thing as food. We feel thirst because there's such a thing as water. Well, if we feel a sense that there ought to be something more, something better, is it possible that that instinct in us is trying to tell us something? And that's, I think that's a universal experience. Even in our very best moments, our very best relationships, our very best experiences, often the moment passes and we think, well, you know, we have to go back and try and get more of that or go somewhere else and try something else. And all we're saying is, you know, is it possible that that instinct in you is actually a very good one, that you should follow where that instinct leads?
Now, is this course sort of for someone who, I don't know, is an atheist who comes along and is definitely sure there's no God going to get anything out of this course? Is the person who's maybe an agnostic and sort of, you know, travelling along without really thinking about it too much sort of... Does it have to be someone who's already kind of got an interest in spiritual things and is maybe thinking about Christianity?
Important is that we were aiming to mobilize church family and evangelism, just as Alpha have done. So as a leader, I'm trying to get groups together, you know, non-Christians on a table, inquirers with leaders. Now, those leaders, wherever people come from, we're saying, yeah, here's some core material, but your job is to try and help them with the questions they've got. Mm. So if you get a hardened atheist who's gracious enough to come, how great for him to come, and they do come, actually, then the table leaders, you hope, would pick up wherever they're at.
Yeah.
But there's core material to interact. Unashamedly, we're going to be looking at God the Father. We're going to be looking at Jesus. We're unashamedly saying, you know, as we preach Christ, God opens blind eyes, as 2 Corinthians 4 says. But at the same time, the nature of the table and the discussion is that you are constantly exploring what people are thinking and trying to explain and encourage where they're at.
Yeah, I mean, I've found that certainly if you're trying to reach people who are just not interested in coming anywhere near a church, you know, the biblical model is obviously not so much come and hear, it's go and tell. So we would encourage people to, you know, maybe think about, this is something, that a film that they could show on their tablet or phone, sit down in a coffee shop with just one-to-one with a friend. Mm. And I think that is probably, that may well be a much more fruitful model than, you know, come to my church and come and go through a course.
I want to talk about the films, but before that, there's something that you kind of had a eureka moment to do with the prophet Nathan. In the Old Testament. So tell us what happened in terms of the insight this gave you into how you draw people in to their need to see the idols in their life.
Yes. Well, there's a fascinating, if you look at John the Baptist and the way that he talks to Herod about his adultery, it's very striking, because John the Baptist really just goes straight in with raw propositional truth. He says, you know, you're sleeping with your brother's wife, you need to stop. Just stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he does get his head cut off, which I suppose we could say is negative feedback. But nevertheless, it's a, you know, that's a biblical approach. If you go back to the Old Testament, you look at the way that Nathan talks to King David about his sin. Now, it's exactly the same sin. It's adultery. But the way that Nathan approaches it, rather than just presenting raw propositional truth, what he does is he tells David a story.
Mm.
And through the story, as David gets invested in the characters in the story, once David gets invested in the story and says, well, the person who did this deserves to die, that's the moment where Nathan says, right, do you realize actually you're the man? That's you. That's what you've done. So he uses the story to catch the conscience of the king. So that was a real, as you say, eureka moment. We realised that if we could do that with the films, tell stories in the films which just draw people in so that they can see more clearly the way that they've related to God, but also the way that God in his grace relates to them, then we're really starting to engage not only people's minds, but also their hearts.
Enrico, these stories, these films that accompany each session, that they're a bit like sort of modern day parables. Interestingly, you've opted for not having speech. It's essentially a sort of silent movie in that sense. So tell us about what you're trying to do with these films.
Well, as an evangelist, there are always three things you're doing. Sovereignty. So we're praying that God will open blind eyes, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 6. Integrity, you want to tell the truth. But thirdly, creativity, all things to all men to win as many as possible.
Mm.
And so we are in a visual culture. And we are in a culture which is finding propositional truth more and more difficult to hear.
Yeah.
So we film these films saying, can you see the relational mayhem that occurs when we live without God?
Mm.
I mean, I was at All Souls on for week 5 on Monday evening, and we had a little clip from the prophet Hosea. In a way, it was that. So this man has a wife, she goes off, they've got kids, she goes off to be a geisha girl, sort of semi-prostitute type thing. He goes to find her, he gets beaten up, he has to pay, he brings her home, her two boys are thrilled to have her home, and then 2 days later she's off again, and the boy stands there with a satchel and bag and says, Dad, off you go again to get her. Now we're saying, can you see this is the way we treat God? He is like this man that comes for his wife, just as Hosea was, and we're like Gomer. We spent a lot. There's a great deal of resource that's gone in to try and help people feel what you feel in the book of Hosea.
It is sort of what Jesus was doing on a mountainside, telling stories. It's the modern day equivalent almost of telling the parables.
I'll tell you this, I've been involved with evangelism for 25 years in this country, and I haven't seen stuff like what we're trying to do. I don't mean to sound pompous, but we, you know, we are, there is a little silent movie to introduce to say to people, can you feel what it is we do to God and where it is our idols take us? So I just really hope people will actually give that a try.
So if people want to see the films, you're actually, don't even have to buy them, that you're releasing them for free, I understand, online.
Yeah, that's right. So people can watch these story films. We're going to be putting those out one by one on our Facebook page, the Life Explored Facebook page, and also via our website as well.
And the website is?
Right, so it is life.explode.red. So it's the word life explored, but with some dots in key places.
Oh, okay, life.explode.red.
So .red is the domain name, yeah.
Okay, wow. That's
very,
quite seen
very modern, isn't it?
That's very cool, very cool. Yeah. Okay, and I understand that kind of the big sort of push you're looking at is sort of September. You want to see churches starting to use the material, to see if run courses in the autumn and that kind of thing.
Well, certainly we'd say leaders, get it and have a look at it.
Okay.
I think if you're like me, you'll want to get it and have a look at it. Sure. Have a look, maybe run a little
trial.
Yeah. Show your leaders, see what's happening. But it's getting people's confidence so they can bring friends.
Yeah.
And I just think this is so fresh and so sort of profound in terms of connecting with the idolatry and saying, can you see what's going on? Please have a look. We'd love you to just see what you make of it.
Great. Well, go check out the Facebook page. You can find it there on Facebook, Life Explored, or life.explode.red.
Yes, you got it. A
memorable one. And all the very best for this new endeavour and this new chapter in the sort of from the stable of All Souls and Christianity Explored and so on. I feel like you're doing what needs to be done, which is engaging with the culture where they're at, but not sacrificing at any level biblical truth in the process. So well done, guys.
Well, we'd covet people's prayers. We really would. We would love this to glorify and honour the Lord Jesus, and we'd covet prayers as we set about getting it out to people. You're unbelievable.
Thanks for being with me on today's show. Don't forget that you can get links to the podcast, articles, videos and recent Unbelievable conference on DVD, all available as ever from premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. Love to hear from you too about today's programme. If you don't want to read my write-up of the interview I had over the last 2 weeks with Darren, it's our cover feature on the September edition of Premier Christianity magazine. Go to the website premierchristianity.com to read it there, or even better, request a free sample copy at premierchristianity.com/free sample. Next week here on Unbelievable, you're going to be hearing the live discussion I chaired out in America, in California, between atheist Ryan Bell and Christian guest Sean McDowell. Was really pleased to be able to be out there with an audience, and you're going to be hearing what happened. So I do hope you can come back for next week's show. For the moment, coming up next here on Premier Christian Radio, The Profile.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.